The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Now your host, Roger Waldron.
Today my guest on Off the Shelf is Scott Buchholz. Scott is the Federal Chief Technology Officer at Deloitte, and today we're going to be talking about Deloitte's recently issued report on Tech Trends 2017, The Government Perspective, and it's subtitled The Kinetic Enterprise, and I'm interested to talk to Scott about how they came up with that subtitle, which fascinates me. But Scott, welcome to the show.
It's good to be here.
Well, I'm looking forward to the conversation, but first, before we get into that, I wanted to give you an opportunity to talk a little bit about how you came to be the Federal Chief Technology Officer at Deloitte, your technology and government sort of background.
Sure. I've been working with technology probably for, a really long time, let's go with. I actually started doing software development and architecture.
You don't want to admit your age there, Scott?
I don't want to admit
okay.
my age.
Okay.
Not going to lie.
Okay.
Because every time I do the math, it starts getting really depressing.
It does get troubling. As someone who knows that, it does get troubling when you start thinking about the numbers.
Yep. In any event, I've actually was doing commercial consulting for a number of years, and then about 15-ish years ago, started working with the federal government. And I've worked with a number of the different agencies around the different sectors. A lot of times what I do is I'm helping people try to do things they haven't done before, whether it's innovation, modernization, digitization, analytics, those sorts of things.
Great. Let's turn to the report again, the Kinetic Enterprise. How did you guys come up with that subtitle first?
Part of what you need to realize is every year we try to come up with something catchy. We bandied around a whole bunch of different themes. There were Star Wars themes in honor of some of the Star Wars movies coming out. There have been a number of other
things. And I am a Star Wars fan, so I must confess.
Yeah, well, we have a number of closet and not-so-closet Star Wars fans in our office of the CTO. Where we wound up, though, is that because everything is in motion and continues to be in motion, the physicists in the group said that really the word we needed was kinetic, right? Kinetic energy, kinetic movement. And really, that's the story of what's going on in writ large at the moment.
And when you stop and think about it, that is a great description of the technology market and or technology trends and what's going on, and how the government sort of right now is trying to keep up with technology trends. And that's always been someone who worked in government for 20 years. That's always been the huge challenge, the government being behind the curve. So this, so when you talk about the report and the tech trends for 2017 from the government's perspective, as I count it, there's sort of seven or eight different sort of big picture trends. And I thought what we could do for the show is talk about each of those a little bit and what they are, what they mean for government, where you see things going, and what government folks need to think about from that perspective. So with the first trend, I'm just going to open it up and you can talk about what it is and we can go and dive deeper. It's IT Unbounded. So what does that mean?
IT Unbounded is really about the business of IT. And that's, we actually have six mega trends that we think about that we've been tracking over the past 8 years that we've been doing the trends. And what we try to do when we do the trends report is we try to look 18 to 24 months out and figure out what is it that we're seeing in the market today that we believe is going to be more in the mainstream in the next 2 years. And that's across our commercial state, government practices, our federal practice, our international practices, and other areas. IT Unbounded is the evolution that we're seeing in terms of how IT departments are operating and organized. What we're finding is that as more and more is moving to the cloud, we need different skill sets to manage it. As more and more is moving to Agile and DevOps, there's a different org structure that's needed. There are different skill sets that are needed, as opposed to the traditional IT organizations. And then moreover, what we're also seeing is some organizations are starting to put resources back directly under control of the business units. So they're taking more of a product focus, they're taking less of a central IT focus, and but they're doing it in a way that's a little bit different than's been done before. So different governance, different standards, different enabling, but basically we see some of our customers where the business is now paying directly for the resources, and they're under the control and doing whatever it is the business wants, which is a bit of a change.
Yeah. Well, when I think of the term unbounded, too, when I think about that in a government perspective, I think about silos. That's mm-hmm. just, you know, as someone who worked at GSA for a long time, you know, just, you know, the different systems and the different services and how well or how poorly, in some instances, those systems were able to communicate across and how people, whether people could leverage the technologies. Is that a big piece of what you're seeing agencies think about when you think about IT Unbounded?
Yes. And I mean, a lot of IT Unbounded is, the IT Unbounded side of the trend is really about organization, people, and culture. And some of the others are about the technology. But as we know, you know, form follows function. When we set up the silos in our organizations or when we set up the systems, they tend to create the silos, or the silos tend to create the systems, and then they become self-reinforcing. The hope is, certainly it's happening out in the commercial space a lot more, but the hope is as some of these things come into government more and more, as there's more agile, there's more DevOps, there's more modernization, there's more pressure for change, that some of these things will enable some of those silos to come down and more coordination across.
Right. I'd be interested. So in the context of IT Unbounded, is the technology piece easier than the culture piece in the government? Well, you know, it's both, right? You talked about management structures and how people are organized, how organizations are organized, mm-hmm. entities are organized to take advantage of the technology, or does the technology drive those changes? Just which from your perspective is the most challenging?
I think in the government, the organization and the culture tends to be the most challenging. You know, whether the technology drives the culture or the culture drives the technology is a little bit of the chicken and the egg sometimes. The answer is both tend to drive at different rates and different speeds at different times. At the end of the day, though, without the culture in place, it's hard to move the technology. So as an example, people aren't moving to the cloud because there are cultural impediments, not because there are technical impediments.
Right. And I think, you know, just the imperative for change, I guess, in the private sector, you know, right, you have a profit loss sheet, mm-hmm. right, you have to stay in business. The imperative to embrace change in the government isn't quite the same. Mm-hmm. There isn't quite the same, there isn't the pressure to do that as nearly as much. But you know what? We're already up on the first break. So my guest today is Scott Buchholz. He is the Federal Chief Technology Officer at Deloitte. And we're talking about Deloitte's 2017 Tech Trends Report from a government perspective, the Kinetic Enterprise. And when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about dark analytics. Scott, that's kind of scares me what that is or isn't. So I'm looking forward to that conversation. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest today is Scott Buchholz. Scott is the Federal Chief Technology Officer at Deloitte, and we're talking about Deloitte's 2000 Tech Trends Report, A Government Perspective, The Kinetic Enterprise. And Scott, in the first segment, we talked about IT Unbounded, and you know, we're going to run through each of these trends mm-hmm. and talk about how they impact government, what they are, and what it means for government. And the next trend that's identified in the report is dark analytics. So I'm just going to open that up and let you, what is dark analytics?
Dark analytics is about trying to figure out how to take the information that is in the dark, quote unquote, in the enterprise and bring it to light so that it can be analyzed and used. A lot of that's, we're accustomed to being able to do analytics on structured data, the transactions and the reports. What we aren't as used to being able to do is to do analytics on the text, the complaints that people send in, the tickets that are written, the other things, or on text files or on image files and videos and other information which isn't as structured and isn't as readily available for most of our analytic techniques. And what we're seeing is on the cutting edge, actually in the government as well as in the private sector, there's a lot more movement to start looking at text analytics and text mining to be able to figure out what are the trends in terms of what people are saying and be able to respond to them more proactively, right? Whether it's a correspondence management system that's automating the process of figuring out the right response. It's the facial recognition that's going on everywhere these days, which is being used by some of the government agencies in addition to Facebook and Google and everybody else. So a lot of this is basically looking at where that trend is headed, where those directions are going, how people are taking better advantage of the information they already have.
Right. And, you know, structured data, I guess, and then it's dark data, so to speak. As a layperson, I'm not right. Sure. I'm fumbling with the question, but you know, how much of that is there out there that you know the government or different, you know, what let's say it's, you know, Health and Human Services or the VA, looking at how they're providing service to veterans. Is that kind of things you're talking about? People, you know, mining the data about complaints and that sort of thing. How much of that data is out there? I mean, it seems to me like we have new, you know, management of whether it's government or industry hasn't really even begun to scratch the surface of all that data that flows around the internet. Is that fair?
Absolutely. That's absolutely fair. If you think about it, there are some agencies and departments that are much more transactionally focused, but the vast majority, the VA in particular, and many other organizations, you're going to have doctors submitting letters and doctors sending in written reports. Some of them are going to be an image that was scanned. Some of them are going to be text that was uploaded. And the ability to actually go through all of that and start looking for trends and commonalities to start analyzing it the same way that we analyze the structured data that we force the doctors to input, being able to do those two things in tandem is going to unlock a tremendous amount of possibility for things as we go forward, right? The medical industry is looking at this really closely, but a lot of other industries are as well.
So what does that lead to? Does that provide insights on areas where you, an organization needs to focus on improving customer service or identifying trends? It could even, I guess it could conceivably even be identified trends, right, in treatment of veterans that are, you know, not apparent other than looking through all that data, right?
Yes.
Is that fair?
Yes. I mean, analytics is really about pulling insights out of data. And part of the challenge sometimes is it's hard to know exactly what you might be able to get until you start. But you can envision, if you're the VA, it's about being able to offer better treatments and better symptom identification, better, you know, more quick, more rapid response. It's being able to pinpoint problems and, you know, if there are high numbers of complaints about particular areas, about particular hospitals, about particular segments of the hospital, those sorts of things if you're the VA. But you can sort of envision if you're if you're the ombudsman for the IRS, for the example, right? You can use the same techniques to go look for insights in terms of what's causing problems.
This seems like this is a new skill set, you know, in terms of talent. You know, where is the government in that regard, or just in general, where are we, whether it's government or industry, in terms of, you know, developing this capability?
Interestingly, there are more government agencies doing this kind of work than I think most people suspect. It tends to be in niches, and it tends to be many times with the help of other organizations, right? Either other government organizations or other private sector organizations. Certainly the intelligence community does a lot of it that they don't want to tell us about.
Yeah, sure.
Yep. Right?
Right. Absolutely.
The challenge is there isn't enough of the capacity in the market to be able to do everything that people are envisioning. And so part of where we are is trying to figure out how to get those skill sets more, better, faster, collectively so that we can all do more of this going forward.
Right. And it seems to me it's areas right where third parties are creating the data that an organization wants to analyze, whether it's a Fed, you know, some sort of financial regulation or the V, like the example we used on the doctors. So, well, let's go on to another trend. We only got, you know, an hour for the show and we've gotten through two of them. So let's machine intelligence. Mm-hmm. And I just think of artificial intelligence with that title. But what is Deloitte talking about there when you talk about machine intelligence?
It's all of the trends where we're replacing routine activities by machines. It's a lot very common in claims processing. It's very common when you have people who are doing data entry. It's very common when you have people who are doing simple checks against fields. It's becoming increasingly common both in the government and in the private sector. And in fact, we're in the process of putting together a scorecard by department and agency of how the agencies and departments are doing at automating routine tasks using machines, right? And the ability to do so is going up.
And is that, when you think about that, you know, one of the big challenges the government has and over the, is you know, just period is legacy systems,
mm-hmm.
right? And installed bases that are around forever. Is this a machine intelligence? And I think some of the other topics we'll cover later, mm-hmm. you know, is this where the government, you know, even though it's taking advantage of it, has to address its underlying, you know, legacy systems to be able to fully, you know, take advantage of the advances in this area?
To be able to fully take advantage of it, yes, modernization has to occur. To be able to get started, not as much. A lot of the newer technologies can interface with the legacy technology, simulate human beings entering things in screens, and that's one way to get started, right? It also helps you figure out where it is that you need to be going as you look forward down the road.
Right, and you mentioned you guys have been doing a scorecard. When is that for machine? Or machine intelligence, you're going to be doing a scorecard of agencies?
It's going to be in the next couple of months, right? Okay. Looking at essentially clerical processes susceptible to automation and how agencies and departments are progressing against
right. progress. Have you got any sense, and I don't want to steal anybody's thunder, anybody doing well, or do you want to save that for another show?
How about we save that for another show?
Okay, great. That sounds good. Well, let's start. We'll move on to the next trend. And this one really sort of interests me, this mixed reality. And we've only got about a minute left, but so we'll start and then we'll continue it in the next segment. So mixed reality, I relate to my home life about it. That's a mixed reality. I was like, what's going on here? But what is mixed reality?
Well, when we talk about mixed reality, we mean either a virtual reality, which a lot of people associate with games, or augmented reality if you think about what Google Glass was supposed to be, where images were projected through your glasses while you were doing work. The ability to get people more information more timely as they're doing complex jobs.
Okay, and is that, I think the example you guys use for the listeners, we'll leave with that, is like Pokemon Go? Is that a mixed reality? I mean, it's a real place, but, you know, there's, you know, I'm driving down the street. My daughter was an intern at the Coalition last year, and you know, when it was the craze and we'd be driving home at night and, I'm going to capture this guy. Is that similar?
That's the quintessential game version of augmented reality. Absolutely.
Okay. Well, when we come back, we'll continue our discussion of mixed reality, what it means for government, how government can take advantage of that. My guest today is Scott Buchholz. He is the Federal Chief Technology Officer at Deloitte. And you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Scott Buchholz. Scott is a Northwestern grad who had a great NCAA tournament and is the Federal Chief Technology Officer at Deloitte as well. I don't know which is more important. Which is it, Scott? I don't know. I'm just kidding. Just kidding.
Yeah.
we were talking about when we took the last break, when we went into the last break, we were talking about mixed reality and and I mentioned Pokemon Go, but I know there's like real life you know, organizational business other than games, uses of mixed reality and that particular trend. Can you talk about any examples that you've seen in government, that Deloitte has seen in government?
Absolutely. We actually have been working with the Postal Service over the years on modeling the mail sorting machines. So the mail sorting machines are these gigantic machines, lots of moving parts, easy to lose fingers and limbs because stuff is flying through if you don't know what you're doing. And we worked with them to create a virtual training environment so that people could learn to actually use the equipment by trying to do it or feeling like they were trying to do it with their hands, as opposed to trying to read a piece of paper or look at a screen and answer a bunch of multiple choice questions. Because you find that the uptake and is a lot better that way.
Sure. That's a great example. I really understood that in the sense of like you're visualizing and actually, like you're actually doing it,
yeah.
But you're not really doing it.
But you're not going to
lose a finger.
You're not going to lose a finger.
Right. In the case of the Postal Services, how did they get started? Was it a pilot? Did they, was there what are the keys to the success in implementing something like that from a organizational perspective? Jeez.
They're still in the process of going through it, but a lot of the problem was having a really big, essentially, if you think about it, they have a tactile set of stuff they have to teach people.
Sure.
That's really a three-dimensional problem. And trying to teach people a two-dimensional way of doing it was hard. So it was good because there are CAD drawings, there are machine renderings of the actual equipment, and it's possible to take that, turn it into a virtualized environment, and then you can start thinking about how do you use the virtual environment for all sorts of things. Training's just one of them, but it's the easiest one for people to grasp.
Right. And then there's another example that was mentioned in the report is the Office of Naval Research.
Mm-hmm.
What did they do there?
Well, they're exploring, like a number of other organizations, the idea of using glasses with projections on them to be able to help people do their jobs better. So, naval research is looking at whether or not they can put glasses on the warfighter and overlay battlefield information in their visual display so that you're looking both at the battlefield and information is being projected at the same time. Lots of other organizations are using it to, for example, the telcos have 50 different types of equipment out in the world. And as opposed to trying to force everybody to remember every 50 different variation of the piece of equipment, if they can put the information in the glasses,
sure,
the glasses can recognize the equipment, then you can tell the person how to fix things faster and you get better turn times. So it sounds like science fiction, but I know the people who are actually starting to do this sort of stuff for real.
It's almost like having the manual.
Yes.
Yeah, right in front of you.
Right in front of you.
At any time, depending on what you're... Yeah, that's amazing. Okay, so let's talk about... We got to make sure we make it through all these trends.
Yep.
So the next trend that's mentioned in the report is inevitable architecture. So what is that, Scott?
Inevitable architecture is basically where we see organizations going from their technology perspective. If we look around at startups, what we see is they tend to be small IT, lean IT, cloud-based. You have organizations that do half of the clearing for the financial trading houses that have 20 people in their IT department total, right? And if you sort of think about that, that's amazing.
Right, that is amazing.
By the way, they run the back office and the front office with 20 people. And so a lot of inevitable architecture is about how do we take the trends that are happening to break things down and start rebuilding things in a way that's more scalable, easier to manage, and so forth.
Right. So when I looked at your trends, I have to say the two that really, they're all related and are interrelated, but the IT... Unbounded and the inevitable architecture seem to be sort of feed off each other. Is that fair to say?
That is fair to say. If you think about it, IT Unbounded is about the people and the processes. And inevitable architecture is about the processes and the technology.
And does inevitable architecture, does that drive, it seems to me, you know, when you talk about cloud and that sort of, and open, that sort of thing, drive down, you know, costs for organizations from an IT perspective. Is that one of the benefits of it? Not, you know, there's opportunities to, right, to increase efficiency as you've described, right? And in the power of having 20 people run that organization. But also, I mean, that also means lower IT cost, it seems to me. I'm just also thinking about our organization, whether instead of having, you know, buying all the iron and having it in our office, we utilize a cloud. And it's a lot more cost effective. Is that a big opportunity for government?
It's a huge opportunity. We've actually been working with some of our commercial customers who have about, one of them had $5 billion in annual infrastructure spend across data centers, networks, you name it. And they actually, over a couple of years, created a private cloud, migrated everything there, and then they migrated most of the workloads from the private cloud to the public cloud. They went from $5 billion, they saved $1 billion, they're now at $4 billion in annual spend.
So a 20%. So I think 20% I knew my math savings. Right. I wasn't a math major.
No, you got it right.
I got it right. Okay, you got it right. Very good. So, it seems to me that when people talk about IT modernization, which is a big topic on the Hill or just in government in general and addressing the legacy systems, it's try to get that return on investment over the long term. Is that what you're seeing?
Yes, and we're also seeing from a Deloitte perspective, there are new ways of attacking some of the legacy mainframe systems that have been around for 30 years that didn't exist even 5 or 10 years ago. And we're in the process of helping clients basically refactor applications by translation so that they can actually get modernization journeys unstuck, restarted, migrate to the cloud, migrate off the mainframes if they want, and then get into relational databases and more modern technology so that they can accelerate their journeys forward.
Right. Good. So, and we're going to at least start on one. We got about 2 minutes left in this segment. We're going to start on the, and I think this is related too as well, right? Everything as a service. That is what it sounds, right?
It sounds. It's the Uberization of everything.
Okay.
If you look at the world these days, people want to be able to buy things when they need them in the quantities that they need, as opposed to making large investments. So as opposed to buying a car, I can just buy travel times from Uber. But in the same way, a lot of the cloud movement, the movement to the cloud, is really about being able to buy things on demand and to pay for them on demand. It's about being able to do that for infrastructure, for capabilities, for systems and software, and even increasingly for business processes, where there are now companies and startups in the space trying to figure out how to use cloud-based systems to enable people to do good old-fashioned business process outsourcing in a different way.
It sounds to me, when you describe it, I just think of, you know, basically a completely, you know, universal just-in-time world or virtual world of just-in-time delivery of whatever it is, whether it's the cloud services that you need at that particular point of time or utilizing, you know, web services to purchase goods at a, you know, when you actually need them. Is that, you know, and it seems to me there's a lot of, you know, we just talked about potential savings, but it seems to me, you know, the government and industry as a whole, there's a huge still untapped possibility in terms of creating additional efficiencies.
Absolutely. And particularly as things move from the analog world and the physical world to the digital world, people are talking about reducing friction the friction in interactions and making things easier to do.
I like that term. Yeah.
So if you're frictionless when you download ebooks to your e-reader, and if you think about that, how much easier that process has gotten, how much more convincing it is to separate my money from me to buy those books, right?
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, I like books, but, you know, but buying books means, either, I guess, ordering them, waiting for them to come in the mail, or getting in my car, going to one of the remaining bookstores around, right? And buying the book and then driving home, right? So I like reducing friction. Scott, we're already up on the break. This is our last segment. We're going into our last segment, and we'll get to the last couple trends, and then we'll just take a step back and think sort of strategically what all it means for government or doesn't mean. My guest today is Scott Buchholz. He is the Federal Chief Technology Officer for Deloitte, and you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Scott Buchholz. Scott is the Federal Chief Technology Officer at Deloitte, and we're talking about Deloitte's recently released Tech Trends 2017, a government perspective report, and with a subtitle, The Kinetic Enterprise. And Scott, we have two more trends we sort of want to talk to finish up, and then we'll get into sort of the even bigger picture, I guess, so to speak. But the next trend that's identified in your report is blockchain, the trust economy. So what is that? I started thinking about Bitcoin when you wondered about that one, but go ahead.
Well, blockchain was developed out of Bitcoin, so it's natural that you should think about it.
There you go.
Congratulations.
I get an A for the day.
You get an A for the day.
Okay, thanks.
Blockchain is, I have yet to find a way to describe it that doesn't sound really abstract, right? It's distributed ledger technology.
Well, that's
your job.
You're a technology guy. You got to sound abstract, right? Go ahead.
But I like actually being able to explain to people what stuff does.
Okay, yes. Well, you've done a good job today, so.
Well, thank you. At the end of the day, blockchain's really interesting, I think, for what we might be able to do with it, more so than how it works. And at the end of the day, there are applications that people are looking at for distributed identity management. So the idea that you could be able to identify who a person is, to enable an individual to make their personal information both secure but available on an as-required or as-needed basis. So there's a set of potential uses around digital identity. There's a set around digital asset management. So I wish we could do this so that I didn't have to buy my digital rights to my music format in Amazon differently than Google, differently than Apple, differently than whatever.
Okay.
Right? I'd like to own the right to listen to my songs, not the right to listen to my songs on a device with a particular vendor. And there are a couple of other use cases around information dissemination. So publishing titles and other sorts of things, publishing food safety records when they're across distributed corporations, lots of different uses like that. At the end of the day, the government may not be the biggest user of blockchain, depending on how the technology shakes out over the next 5 years or so, but it's certainly going to have to regulate all of the uses that the financial system's trying to use, that the retail entities are thinking about using. Certainly, if it gets into digital identity management, it becomes a really big deal for a lot of different agencies.
Right. Yeah. I mean, when you described it, think about registrations and availability of that information. I mean, the government, third parties register with the government for many, many different purposes.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Whether it's creation of corporation, and your report mentions state of Delaware, right,
yep.
and what they're doing there, but I could see how, it almost sounds like you register once and then use many times in a certain sense, right? Is that the potential efficiency there?
It's a way of making records public in a secure fashion, in a distributed fashion that isn't possible today.
Okay. You know?
And Delaware is piloting doing that for corporations registered in Delaware, which is an awful lot of the corporations in the U.S.
Yes, right? Absolutely. Yep.
And so we'll see, Walmart was piloting things with food safety. Some of the government agencies are looking at digital identity. There's lots of experimentation going on.
Yeah, it seems to me it's a really potentially powerful way that the market may change, right? And where are we on the horizon for blockchain, some of the things you're talking about.
people have compared the current maturity of blockchain to the maturity of the internet in the early 90s.
Okay.
So, you know, the first sort of online stores are starting to show up phase, and nobody's quite sure where it's going to go from there.
Okay. So we're in the early sort of
phases,
but the way the internet's developed, I mean, I was alive then, so I'm not going to be alive, knock on wood. Okay, so, and then the last trend, let's get on the last trend. That's Exponential's watch list.
Yep.
What is that?
There are a bunch of technologies that could change the world in ways that are hard to define that we've kept an eye on over the years, whether it's nanotechnology, whether it's the CRISPR gene sequencing technology, whether it's quantum computing, all sorts of different things. And what we tell people is just keep an eye out on them, because they're not likely to be here today or tomorrow, or some of them are here today, but certainly they're in very early days. The implications are unclear, but they could completely change everything. Quantum computing could make security and cryptography as we know it obsolete. And then we'd have to figure out whole new ways of securing information, right? That would be a huge change.
Yeah, that would be a big deal.
That would be a big deal.
All right. So, and is that, you know, that sort of leads to my next sort of question, or big sort of, we can start talking like big picture. Mm-hmm. You have all these trends, and when you're talking to or dealing with the government, you know, you have government CIOs and trying to manage, you know, modernize, manage, take advantage of technology. What are some of the key sort of takeaways in terms of whether it's behaviors or strategies that, you know, technology managers in the government need to think about when they think about these trends?
I think the most important takeaway is that innovation is here to stay and change is not going to stop. And as a result, I think people need to think about the cultural implications, the process implications, and the technology implications for change. From a cultural perspective, thinking about how do you enable people to innovate? How do you encourage failure at a smaller scale? How do you, recognizing that if you're trying something that's hardly ever been done before, the chances of failure are high. And sometimes in the government, the penalties are disproportionately large.
Right.
What can we do to encourage people to fail small and fail fast, learn from the experience and move on to better things? That's the cultural side, which, you know, is going to be challenging in and of itself.
Right.
The process side is how do we get people to do things, think about things differently. If traditionally we've done waterfall and we plan the plan, we work the plan.
Sure.
Agile is all about we'll get what we get when we get to the end, and we'll be satisfied with that.
Which right, is and you know what you want when you get to the end,
you'll,
kind of thing, sort of, right?
Well, it's more about, you know,
it's about meeting the function.
It's meeting the function because studies have been done that say 60% of system functions don't actually get used.
Right.
So how do you make sure that you go to the users first and say, what do you really want? What do you really want? What do you really want? What do you really need? What can't you live without? What's the next thing you can't live without?
Right. Prioritizing.
Prioritizing. Yeah. But from a user perspective, that's a very different experience than, you know, I tell you what I think I need, you go off and disappear for a few years, you come back and show me what you thought I said, and then we look at that and go, that wasn't what I meant, and go around in circles from there.
Right. See, when you describe that, it definitely sounds to me like one of the keys is, you know, institutionally or organizationally, making sure everybody's at the table.
Absolutely.
Right? As a leader, if you're a technology leader in an agency, trying to figure that out, is that?
That is absolutely true. And that's why that then becomes a cultural thing too. You have to change IT. You have to change the way the business thinks about its interactions with IT. Like a lot of things have to change in order to enable that.
Right. And I think one of the, I don't know if you have any thoughts on this, we've got about 40 seconds left, but you know, it's not, it may not, it, you know, there's a lot of talk in procurement these days about access to innovation. And a government doesn't drive innovation in the way it may have done 30 years ago, you know, the Defense Department. Do you feel like people need to think, you know, part of that team or institution definitely has to be the procurement folks. Is that fair?
Absolutely. Talking with people who've been in the market for 30 years, the way people have chosen to interpret the FAR 30 years ago in the Defense Department looking for innovation is very different from the way people are choosing to interpret it today. There's a lot more latitude to be able to do the right thing at the right time at the right scale than people probably suspect. And part
You're
of the challenge is
correct about
how
that.
Do you get creative about it?
Yeah, that's great. That's a great last thought for the show. Scott, I want to thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
My guest today has been Scott Buchholz. He is the Federal Chief Technology Officer at Deloitte. We've been talking about Deloitte's 2017 Tech Trends Report, A Government Perspective, The Kinetic Enterprise. And you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.